Hey, and welcome to FutureThinkers.org, a podcast about the evolution of technology, society, and consciousness. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yuvia Ivanova. If you're new to the show and you want to get a list of our favorite books, popular episodes, and to join our community, go to FutureThinkers.org/start. All Future Thinkers episodes are now on video. To watch the premiere of each episode and join the discussion live, subscribe to our YouTube channel at FutureThinkers.org/YouTube. A quick announcement before we start. Mike and I are working on designing some courses, and we'd like to get feedback from you guys on what you'd like to learn from us. So go to futurethinkers.org/courses and fill out our quick survey. It'll really help us out. Enjoy the episode.
All right, today we're going to be talking about the concept of adulting and why it's relevant.
Yeah, so there's actually some depth to it. If you haven't heard of it, it's this ironic term that millennials use to describe when they're doing something adult-like, like, you know, cooking dinner or paying their taxes, while not actually feeling like an adult mentally.
Yeah. So we're also going to talk about how it's changed, like how the expectations of our parents of adulting have changed from what they are now and how it will change in the future.
Or being an adult, because adulting is a very new term. It only came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah. I really like that term, actually. It's very, I don't know. I like the sarcastic part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
How do you do adulthood?
Yeah. So where do we start?
Right. So maybe we can give a brief history of why it came to be that millennials don't really feel like adults, even though some of them are in their 30s now.
Yeah. Well, the first one is that we go through stages of life differently than our parents did. So they're kind of like old scripts that a lot of us were taught when we were kids, like, go to school, go to university, get a good job, meet someone nice, get married, have kids, this sort of thing. And that there'd be this followable, achievable path that was laid out before you, which is not really the case anymore. Most of us can't afford real estate. We change careers quite often. Education doesn't exactly prepare us for a job or for a future or for anything even relevant in today's society, never mind the future.
Mm-hmm. And then the prevalence of birth control has changed how people start families. People can actually delay having kids indefinitely, pretty much. And then the variety of family structures has changed. You know, it's not just one mom and one dad anymore. You know, LGBT couples have become a lot more prominent, or single parents, or now even like polyamorous couples. So there's just this myriad of options for young people to choose through. In part that creates anxiety, because mm-hmm. things were a lot simpler in the past and it was a lot more obvious. You know, by 25 you should have graduated university, by 30 you should have already been married with kids, you know, by 35 you should have owned a house, etc. But nowadays it's just not so simple anymore.
Then there's the added complexity of technology, which makes things really crazy, because we have this perception of everyone else as being super successful. And, you know, we see the best sides of everyone's lives, and we look at our own lives and think, you know, why am I not there? What's wrong with me? But obviously there's this polishing that's occurring that we're not really paying attention to.
Yeah. And people's in-person relationships are suffering also, because they didn't develop the life skills needed to actually maintain real relationships. And when everything happens online in this kind of ultra-polished manner, virtue signaling becomes the currency rather than actual virtue, than actual work and actual responsibility and actual emotional intelligence and dealing with people's issues.
Right.
Yeah. And then another factor is that a lot of young people are really concerned about global issues and things like climate change, you know, global conflicts, existential risks, inequality. And I don't know if it's because those conflicts or those issues have increased globally. I actually don't think so.
I think coverage has increased.
Coverage has increased. And so it's at the forefront of people's minds. And I think also the millennial generation was raised with this idea that you could do anything you wanted to do. Like, you could change the world. You're a special, unique snowflake. Like, you are here for a purpose. You know, previous generations weren't raised with this idea. A lot of the time they were raised with the idea, it's just like, you know, you do these things in life and you'll be fine. But now the expectations are just so much higher.
I'm curious as to what that has to do with the parenting strategy of our parents' generation. Like, do you feel that they raised us with this idea that we could be anything, that, you know, that they wanted to make the next generation fix all the world's problems? So they kind of pumped our tires a lot, made us believe in ourselves maybe more than we should have.
Maybe.
I mean, there. I do remember that kind of messaging being spread when I was a kid. My parents didn't really do it, but that, like, you can be anything you want, no limitations. Definitely, that was very common.
I think it was less common where I grew up in Russia. But in terms of being told that I was really unique and special and that, you know, I was supposed to change the world, yeah, I definitely got that, especially from my mom.
Yeah. So a lot of people have stated, a lot of young people have stated that they have a strong desire to have meaning, purpose, and impact on the world, have meaning in their lives, do something that has value to the world. And yet so much of work out there, especially when you're just beginning, is of no immediate or apparent value to you. It might be to the company, but you don't really recognize how that thing that you're doing can have impact or affect things on a greater scale. And most of the time, it's because you're not having impact on a greater scale. You're just the young person without experience who's been hired to do the job, and you should just do your job to get experience. You know. But people are impatient, and I think that's partially due to the technology aspect as well. We're all used to getting whatever we want immediately. And then when it comes to things that really are important and require a lot of effort and work and attention and patience, we don't have that muscle built up to, you know, to allow those things to work, like relationships, for example.
Yeah, I think the millennial generation is used to things like Amazon next day delivery, Tinder, where you just, like, you know, swipe and then boom, you've got a date and you're awesome and you don't have to have any emotional intelligence or relationship skills.
Yeah, as you said that, you reminded me of the Simon Sinek video that we should probably reference at this point, because what was it called? The problem with millennials. Mm-hmm. We'll leave the link to it in the show notes of this episode.
Yeah, so he points out the problems of millennials very well, but I don't think that he points very well to what brought us there or gives very good solutions. But he illustrates the problems perfectly. Mm-hmm.
So what got us there? Do you want to dive into that a little more?
It's hard to say. I think it was a lot of cultural factors. So one of them was that there were these narratives being perpetuated in the media about stranger danger in the 80s, where children were seen as being in danger by playing by themselves, having unsupervised time, you know, going outside without their parents. And I'm not actually sure where that came from. Do you remember?
In the 80s, there was a huge surge of media coverage about child kidnapping. And I think it was just kind of one of the beginning precursors to the current media landscape, where one thing took off and then more stories were written about it that weren't exactly describing the reality or the statistical relevance of that story. They were just pumping it up because they knew it was getting it was kind of hijacking our attention and getting more views and a lot more attention. So there was this, like, early viral surgence of media coverage of child kidnappings. And then all the parents just freaked out and decided, you know, that's it. We're not letting our kids go out and play anymore. And then an entire generation was basically raised indoors with a lot of child, with a parent supervision, which obviously has had some downsides.
Yeah, right. This helicopter parenting where I think Jonathan Haidt, in his book, The Coddling of the American Mind, really breaks this down, how it happened. And the results of this are actually pretty horrendous.
Yeah.
So it created a whole generation of people who are basically unable to think for themselves. They're constantly referring to the next authority for, you know, conflict resolution, for asking the right opinion. Because, you know, when kids are playing in the same room with their parents all the time, they're never unsupervised. They never get a chance to resolve conflict on their own. They never learn that. Mm-hmm. Just anytime something happens, immediately, like, mom, can you fix this?
Yeah.
And the same thing, you know, like, if there's a disagreement in terms of, like, oh, I think it's this or I think it's this, like, when they're talking about some idea, then here you go. You can ask the authority. Oh, mom, what's the capital of France or whatever?
Yeah.
You don't have to think for yourself. You don't have to go find a book or, you know, take some sort of action. Mm-hmm. You just ask.
And then this is also coupled, this is from Jonathan Haidt's book, coupled with call it culture, mm-hmm. which causes young people, when they perceive a slight or an offense of any kind, then they publicly shame that person. They call them out on Twitter or on, you know, any number of social media networks and try and get that person shamed and destroyed publicly, because they also are signaling their own virtue for having, you know, attacked the justifiable villain for their evil deeds. It's a really horrendous thing too, because then the mob doesn't really think very clearly either and just destroys people's lives without investigating.
And a lot of the time this is done for the most ridiculous things that are completely don't matter, you know, like somebody said something that was slightly biased, or somebody made an off-color joke, you know, things like that. I think there's value in actually in another book by Jonathan Haidt, he talks about why we have moral emotions.
This is the happiness hypothesis.
Yeah. And so there's actually value in publicly discussing somebody's misdoings if they did something truly bad. Yeah. Like, people shouldn't hide, you know, the crimes of others if they know about something. But calling out these kinds of very unimportant things, like somebody said something slightly biased, is not the place to do it. Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about the kind of old history of adulting, the current landscape of adulting. What are we looking at as far as what needs to change about the future? Maybe let's talk about how the world is changing and what kind of ways that is going to require us to adapt.
Yeah. Okay. So the societal complexity is increasing really rapidly. Mm-hmm. And we kind of touched on that earlier, that it's no longer linear. A person's life path is no longer linear. And the different options that they can take in lives are very many. With technology evolving very quickly, it's sometimes difficult to catch up for people and to wrap their heads around it. Mm-hmm. Like, social media has been designed to be increasingly addictive on purpose. It's designed that way because that's how those platforms gain users, and that's how they measure their success, by how much attention they can, you know, how much they can retain themselves in people's attention. Mm-hmm. And because they earn advertising dollars based on that.
Then there's other aspects like the political climate, the economic crisis, an inevitable economic collapse that will come that will be worse than the 2008 collapse. There's a whole bunch of different factors that are making the environment, both human and the actual environment, change super quickly, which requires us to be able to think more quickly, more agile, and there are certain skills and requirements of us to change in order to accommodate that global change. We need to be able to adapt faster. So I guess they're labeled meta skills, right? So there's some of them include learn how to learn.
That's the mother of all meta skills. Yeah. So first of all, I want to define what meta skills are.
Yeah, sure.
So regular skills are things that you can do, that you learn how to do something specific. But meta skills are general skills that you can apply to any area of your life to learn other skills. Yeah. So they're the skills to learn skills.
And before we get into this, I think it's relevant to point out like how the lifestyle that we've lived in the last several, I don't know, 6 years, I guess, have actually really required that. You know, learn how to learn because we're running our own businesses. We're generally solopreneurs, so we have to figure out everything on our own. Then there's the aspect of facing danger and the unknown and being able to, you know, gather the courage and go and do the thing you've got to do anyway without, you know, hesitation. That's been a big thing. Like, we've, you know, willingness to fail has been another part of that.
Yeah.
So
being,
I think
being resilient, being anti-fragile.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of different kind of events, being that we've been global citizens and, you know, ran our online businesses, that have caused us to have to, well, we've put ourselves out there in a lot of ways and failed and failed and failed and failed over and over again, and then built up a bit of a scar tissue to that. So now failure is not so much of a big deal. I mean, we talk to family back home sometimes, and this is an interesting perspective that they have. They just can't believe some of the risks that we've taken over the years. But they don't seem so big anymore once you've had so much exposure. And I think this is just an early precursor to what is going to be required of all of us in the near future.
Yeah.
Because the traditional job and education systems are changing, and we're going to have to be able to adapt in the same way. Like, we might have to pick up and leave very quickly, you know, to look for other jobs or other opportunities. We need to be a lot more flexible in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So what else? What other kind of meta skills are there?
Listening, observing, just attention skills, where you're not just taking the first thing as it's presented to you, but you actually try to observe very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time people see things that they want to see, like they see things based on the ideas that they already have, so that they're not actually truly seeing what's there. They're seeing what their idea of something is. And so really seeing, this kind of meta skill of seeing, is looking at something without judgment, without your preconceived notion. And that's actually impossible to do it in the purest sense because of how we are biologically.
Mm-hmm. Also, you affect what you observe.
Yeah, and you affect what you observe, you know, even on a quantum level. So, but you can get, let's say, less affected or less biased or less, you know, muddled by your preconceived notions of what things are.
So this enters into the realm of sovereignty, which we've talked about a couple times before.
Cognitive sovereignty, yeah. Yeah.
Which is based on three pillars, which are perception.
Sense-making.
Yeah, sense-making and agency.
Yeah. And so perception is exactly that. It's seeing things clearly, perceiving things as they are, as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. And then perception or sense-making is about how do you make sense? What frameworks or models of the world do you use to process those raw senses and mm-hmm. then make decisions, which then moves on to the next level of agency.
Yeah. And so sense making is not just about choosing the right framework, but also understanding that at the end of the day, all frameworks are only approximations. They are never the truth. And that this is just how humans make sense of the world. They use narratives and myths and frameworks, but that is not reality. So you have to be able to discard frameworks, alter them, you know, pick the most suitable one in the moment, deconstruct them, reconstruct them, take different perspectives, all of that. So that's sense making. And then agency is not only what can you actually do. So it's not what you do. It's also what you understanding what you can do. So what are the different possibilities of action here? And are you acting automatically, unconsciously? Are you just reacting? Or are you actually choosing something?
Yeah.
That's agency.
Yeah. So anything else you want to cover before we wrap it up here?
Well, maybe let's talk about what adulting actually should be in the modern times and for the future. Like, what, aside from learning meta skills and gaining cognitive sovereignty, what is a real adult, well-adapted adult in the modern world?
Well, I think that it's really well covered in the meta skills. The only thing I would add to it would be the ability to have courage. So to develop your courage so that you can face the unknown, because there will just be so much more unknown in the future. And then the other one was, to do what needs to be done when you know it needs to be done, which is a pretty standard kind of version of adulting. Like, that nagging feeling that you should do your taxes is probably a good impulse to follow. Go do your taxes, or go, mm-hmm. you know, do whatever is most pressing to do.
Yeah. And on the other hand, stop doing the things that you shouldn't be doing, that you know you shouldn't be doing. Like, yeah. If you're checking your phone 300 times a day like an addict, and you know that it's bad for you, you should probably stop doing that.
You're saying this directly to me because you just, yeah. I've been on YouTube a lot lately. Not perfect.
So I think another thing that is actually really useful is cultivating virtue. And that's something that Jonathan Haidt talks about in his Happiness Hypothesis book. And that's a piece of ancient wisdom that seems to have gotten lost in recent years, where at some point in the 20th century, children began to be taught to think for themselves instead of relying on existing maxims of what actually makes a good life and what kind of virtues actually make a good person. And then they were suddenly taught, like, oh, you should figure out what kind of person you want to be. You can be anything you want to be. And then that just, it confuses people, because then they have no bearing of what is actually good or bad, or like what creates a happy life or doesn't create a happy life. And people are just profoundly confused. So, but there's thousands of years of thought that has gone into this, that there are certain kinds of behaviors and virtues that actually make your life better and that they're worth cultivating. So things like self-restraint and discipline, like, no, having everything that you've ever wanted, and like, you know, a million sexual partners and all of the TV shows that you could possibly want and all of the ice cream and, you know, whatever other things that people crave, having all of that actually doesn't make you happy. It makes people miserable in the end, and it makes them overweight and addicted. And yeah, it's just a mess.
So one of the things about virtues that you could say is learn to give yourself constraints.
Yeah.
This comes into Stoicism too.
Yeah. But there are other virtues too, like courage, you brought up one of them. Another one is emotional intelligence, kindness, love. Like, how do you approach other people? Are you just transactional with them? Or are you actually giving and loving and kind? Are you forgiving? Yeah.
On a related note to virtues, one of the most interesting books that I don't know how I've never checked this out in the past, but Tao Te Ching.
Yes.
Was amazing. Just reading through that. It's very short, but like every single line of that book is just packed with wisdom. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And also there's two other things we want to tell you about before we go. There's we do have like a guide that kind of dives in a little more depth of what we've talked about in this episode. It's called How to Adapt to the Future. It's on our website. If you just go to the front page, a pop-up will show up, or you can find it in the sidebar of the website. You just got to give your email and you can download it. I think it's like 55 pages. And also we are launching two courses. One of them is going to be kind of soft launch. We're only going to have it open to about 20 people, I think, right? Mm-hmm. The course is called The Ancient Art of Adulting. And then the second one is How to Adapt to the Future.
Yeah. And that's about meta skills.
Yeah. Yeah. So these courses have been basically a combination of all the research and the interviews and everything that we've done in this podcast over the last 5 years. Even now, adding to it and assembling all this information is taking us a lot of time and effort. So I think it's going to be really valuable. And so we're going to do like a test round. First 20 people will come in, and then we'll kind of adjust and get feedback and then release it properly after that. So yeah, if you're interested, go to courses.futurethinkers.org. And if you want to download that free guide, you can go to futurethinkers.org, and it's pretty much all over the website.
Yeah. And so this course, actually, you're right. We did put a lot of stuff in there based on the people that we've interviewed in the last 5 years on the show. But we also put in a bunch of our own stories. I mean, we've been both entrepreneurs for 10-something years. And we've been traveling the world and living in different countries for 6 years or something like that. And we've read hundreds of books. So all of that stuff is, we've tried to synthesize it as much as possible and put it into these courses.
Yeah. So again, that's The Ancient Art of Adulting. And the next one is How to Adapt to the Future, which is an extension of the original PDF guide that I've already mentioned. So you can check those all out. Also links in the show notes for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. See you in the next one.
Okay, bye. Thanks for tuning in to Future Thinkers. For all the books, resources, and mentions from this episode, go to futurethinkers.org/88. And if you want to stay up to date with our latest episodes, blog posts, or news from Future Thinkers, join our mailing list at futurethinkers.org/mailing-list. To meet like-minded people, join our Future Thinkers Discord community. Go to futurethinkers.org/discord. Don't forget to subscribe and hit the bell icon to get notified of new videos. You can also follow us on social media to stay connected. If you'd like to get a t-shirt like the new Make America Think Again, go to futurethinkers.org/store. If you like what we do and you want to help us make more podcasts and videos, consider donating or becoming a patron at futurethinkers.org/support. Also visit our sponsor Qualia and use the coupon code FUTURE to get 10% off your purchase.
This episode is brought to you by Qualia, a nootropic supplement that helps support mental performance and mood. To get 10% off, use the code FUTURE at checkout. And to learn more about neurohacking, visit futurethinkers.org/neuro.